All right, so interesting times in Canadian sports, I found.
Big game today, bud. 4:30. Blue Jays Rangers. Let's go. Let's hustle this podcast along. Come on. First pitch,
really,
4:35. Let's go.
Really happy
move
for
along,
the Jays accomplishing what my Mets could not accomplish last night.
Sorry about that.
It's all right.
With a former Jay on the mound, I believe, as well.
It was the good and the bad, because we won bar trivia last night and broke the winning streak, apparently, of somebody who had won that bar's trivia like 6 or 8 straight weeks.
Wow.
But I'm a very even Steven guy, and I knew that the moment that a good thing happened for us, bad things would happen for the Mets. So I kind of came to grips with it. So that's one thing. There's obviously Beer Chuck Gate, which is an ongoing saga. Not all Jays fans. So I'm sure our friends in Philadelphia can relate to the impugning of an entire nation of fans for the actions of one or two.
Yes. Funny how everybody in the country immediately apologized too.
Oh yeah, real
right
funny.
Away.
Real
right
out of character for Canada.
It's apologizing. Anyway, go ahead.
It would have been great for Canada to just like simultaneously give a giant middle finger to everybody, be like, "Yeah, we chucked a beer. Who gives a? They're from Baltimore. They deserved it." But the story I want to talk about real quick off the top before we get into hockey matters is the saga of Canada world champion pole vaulter Sean Barber. You familiar with this, Merrick?
Accidentally ingested cocaine.
For those who don't know, Sean Barber tested positive for coke before he went to the Rio Games. And the backstory on this is the greatest thing I've ever heard in sports, where Barber claimed, and apparently Canadian Olympic officials or Canadian athletic officials believe him, Barber claims that he set up a sexual tryst with a woman on Craigslist's casual encounters page. This was not a prostitution situation, because no money exchanged hands, apparently. But it was just setting up a thing where he would like to have sex, and someone would like to have sex, too. Unbeknownst to Barber...
Is there a special section on Craigslist for hookups with Canadian athletes, like with Olympic athletes, that you need to have, like, a secret password to get? Is there, like, a secret hookup app for Craigslist?
Well, I mean, I gotta imagine he does pretty well for himself when his tagline is "Take a look at my pole." I mean, it's obviously going to be
when you're
right
a
there.
Pole vaulter. I mean, the jokes kind of write themselves.
They do, don't they?
Yeah.
So he goes to this hotel. He meets this woman, unbeknownst to Sean, who, by the way, is a ginger. Just want to put that out there for Sean Leahy.
Okay.
Unbeknownst to Sean, this woman had been doing bumps of coke pretty much for the last several hours, and in fact, did a bump of coke off a tweezer in the bathroom as he arrived. Now, he never saw any cocaine anywhere, he alleges. And she comes out of the bathroom, and they make out and seal the deal over the course of 30 minutes. And he tests positive for cocaine, and we come to find out that he claims, and this has now been verified, I suppose, that he ingested the cocaine by making out with a cokehead.
Is that possible?
Apparently.
Can you transfer it like that?
I didn't know you could do it that way. But I mean, I guess, I don't know if you can get high like that. Although that would explain, you know, the popularity of some starlets in social circles. But at the same time, like, I have to imagine that, you know, if someone has a substance in their saliva, in their system,
I guess,
you'd be able to ingest that saliva and then have it in your system, right?
And you would pop hot for that, because it can't be like a large.
No, well, I don't know. It can't be like how much blow she was doing before they got together, right?
Like, how much could there have been? Like, you'd be able to trace for that little amount.
I guess so. Well, I mean, you have to remember. This is not a pole vault joke, but the bar is set probably a little bit low for testing positive for these substances for these athletes.
Because I just saw the headline and I thought, okay, yeah, sure, whatever. Like, you're right away, you're skeptical, and rightfully so. Okay, sure, I accidentally ingested coke. Is that actually a thing? Can you actually do that?
I guess so. But here's the thing. So we're on the road.
Wow.
We're on the road in the NHL to having cocaine being a banned substance, or at least them testing for it, right? Like, I don't know what the end result of that whole thing was, whether it was just a scare tactic the NHL was putting out when they realize 75% of their players are on coke, or it was a thing that they're actually going to go ahead and do. But I mean, how many Canadian players are opening up their copy of the National Post or whatever and reading the story today and being like,
uh-oh,
you know, when I get pinched.
This is my story.
This is my alibi.
Well, I was on Tinder. We were on the road. It was Philadelphia. it's a great one. I guess there's a new alibi out there. We'll see.
Yeah,
what,
of course.
What
and your suspicion? Your suspicion wasn't piqued, sir. She told me she had been baking. I don't know. That's what I figured the whole that white powder was.
I was riding Dangerfield's great line all the time. Cocaine, cocaine. Oh, I hate cocaine. Sure, I love the way it smells, but
right.
I'm pretty sure that was a Roddy. Was it Roddy Robin Williams? I always thought it was a Roddy Dangerfield line. Or maybe Robin Williams stole it. Or sorry, bought it. Or borrowed it. No.
Oh, want to do. Damn.
He would bought send it. Comedians checks.
Yeah, he would buy
Thank
the jokes.
Thank you, I stole your joke.
Yeah. It was. I mean, I don't think that, you know, Bill Hicks ever got a check from Dennis Leary, if that's what you're saying.
Oh, my. So that's a defense, eh?
I guess so.
Wow.
It's a pretty good defense. I mean, you could say I met a groupie at this bar and we made out and I had no idea that she was on this stuff and I never touched it. And if it's a small enough amount, I guess you could probably use it as an alibi going forward if it worked for Sean Barber. Related story, by the way, Jarrett Stoll released from his PTO in Columbus.
Wow.
What's wrong? What? No.
Wow,
I'm saying.
Wow.
I'm just kind of shifting
it to
hockey.
Because he missed, was it a brother-in-law, sister-in-law that passed away in a car crash in Saskatchewan? So we had to leave for 4 or 5 days, maybe a week. So he missed, I think, 3 games.
I don't think he was going to make that cut anyway, do you?
Nah, I don't think so, but he never, I mean, circumstances around his life at that point kind of precluded him from even having a shot at it.
Well, now I feel terrible.
Sorry, man.
I had a great drug joke all queued up and you had to bring it back to reality.
I know, you had a great Coke joke lined up, man. Sorry, bud.
Is that Coke line right there? That was pretty good.
Oh, boy.
Nice job,
Eric.
Oh,
boy. All right. This is a speed bump in the conversation.
You wanted to talk about Radko Gudas off the top of the show before I derailed and talked about making out with cokeheads.
Not necessarily Radko Gudas specifically. Although, man, the temperature is high right away on a questionable hit on Twitter, eh? Right back where we were last year. Like, fast. Like, did anyone this summer sit back and say, okay, this year, I'm not going to argue about hits on Twitter. This year, I'm just going to refrain from arguing about hits on Twitter because ultimately it goes nowhere. And the answer to that, as we saw in the Flyers-Rangers game, is no. We are going to continue to argue about hits on Twitter and feign outrage and divide lines down orange on one side and a Ranger crest on the other. It was all pretty obvious. And there was a lot of, oh, you're blaming the victim and all that. Okay, we're all past that. And I think the Department of Player Safety on this situation got it perfectly correct. And if I think the rule is 41.1. If you go and look at the video, Greg Wyshynski, it's all to do with hits around the boards and it's the assumption of risk and it's turning your back at the last minute. And when can you assume that a player has enough time to change his trajectory before making a hit? And it all fits. That is a hit that is fine. And the onus of blame on that falls on Jimmy Vesey. I don't want to talk about the hit. I want to talk about Hockey Canada and USA Hockey. Over the past, what is it, Greg? 20 years, they've done a really good job educating people on how to throw body checks and when to pull up when you see numbers at the boards and what's a dangerous hit and what's a headshot and how you need to clean up the way body checking happens at the grassroots and up right through to the minor hockey and junior hockey levels. I think both organizations have done a fantastic job of doing that. It's been exceptional. Now then, the one place where both organizations have fallen down is educating players on how to take hits.
Right.
We've educated players on how to hit. I think the next thing, and it has to come from both, a concerted effort. Like as big as remember when they started to put stop signs on the backs of jerseys when kids started playing hockey? Something as big as that. There needs to be a concerted effort to teach people how to receive body checks. Because more and more you see players unprepared, unaware of their situations, getting smoked specifically around the boards. If you go look at that play, like, Wish, does VC even look over his right shoulder? He just makes a beeline to the puck around the boards, cuts and button hooks real fast to go back the other way. What did you think was going to happen? And this isn't the same as, you know, blaming someone who, you know, oh, you shouldn't have left your purse on the bench, man. This isn't a victim blaming situation, because in hockey, you assume people are going to hit you. And it's your job to not put yourself in vulnerable areas. You should expect they shouldn't hit you illegally. You should expect that they shouldn't hit you around the head. They shouldn't try to low bridge you and take out your knees. But in that situation, VC could not have been more clueless. And even Alain Vigneault said afterwards, the next day, he will learn from this. You know, like right away, Vigneault saying, well, I've seen that hit from that player too many times. But when it became obvious that Gudas was not going to get suspended for it, he took the right route and said, hey, he's going to have to learn from this. And I think all kids growing up are going to have to learn from this as well. We have done, both organizations, USA and Canada, have done a bad job educating people on how to receive body checks. I really believe that.
But isn't a facet of this, though, the swing in the direction of player protection, in the sense that these guys think that they can pirouette along the boards like VC did and draw a 5-minute major and be protected by the officials in the league, because frankly, you can turn your back on a hit and always be the one that gets the benefit for it?
That's why I like that this isn't a suspension, that they're pointing it right back at VC. And the rule is very specific. As the video clearly shows, you know, go back to 41.1. Go look at it. It's exactly what the Gudas VC hit was. And there's hysterical in me. Oh, if that's a hit that's good in the NHL, then the NHL is broken. Well, no, it's not. There is body contact in this game. You need to prepare yourself. I've told this story before. I remember talking to Craig Simpson about it. His son Dylan's an Oilers prospect, played North Dakota. And I said, how did you teach him about body checking when he was a kid? I say, and Simmer told me that he would teach his kid, expect to be hit every single time you have the puck. Prepare yourself to receive a body check. If you get hit, at least you'll be ready for it. And if you don't get hit, bonus. But at all times, prepare yourself to be hit. Maybe that's just the advantage that a second-generation hockey player has, because he has, you know, dad to tell him what it was like in the NHL. But that's where it comes to the organizations. USA Hockey and Hockey Canada really need to have a concerted effort to teach kids how to take body checks and protect yourself, or else. And thankfully for Jimmy VC, you know, he had a bloody nose and he got back out there, scored a goal a little bit later on in the game. Thankfully for Jimmy VC, the repercussions weren't worse. That it wasn't that expensive of a lesson.
And what I found interesting about the reaction to the decision not to suspend him, one, were people like me who just assumed he'd get suspended because the Department of Player Safety in the past has engaged in preseason message sending a lot.
Oh, hang on. Pause on that for 1 second. Because here's another thing to consider, because, you know, you look, and even Vigneault said, oh, I've seen that player make that hit. A player's reputation and past can enhance a suspension, either, for example, what would normally be a 2-gamer. If it's someone with priors, all of a sudden that's a 4 or 5-gamer, but it won't turn a non-suspension into a suspension.
Which is funny because...
just because it's that player.
Which is funny because that's the opposite of what you see on the ice, right? Like, reputation penalties happen all the time on the ice, but they don't happen in the Department of Player Safety.
For players, yeah. Yeah. Because from an official's point of view, this guy hasn't bought himself the benefit of the doubt.
It was less about Gudas than I thought it was going to be about. This is a hit along the boards. They want to... you know, set the alarm clock for everybody entering the season. Hey, look at this kind of hit. Just be careful. Be wary. Watch out. Yeah. But they actually kind of did it a different way. They actually said, hey, look at this hit. This is a thing that we think is okay. But look what this guy did again along the boards during the hit. Don't do that. So it's a different message sending than I think we all anticipated, which is not to send the message to the hitter, but to send the message to the Jimmy VCs of the world. I think they can, you know, Denny Savard their way along the boards and not, you know, pay a price for it.
One of the more refreshing things I ever saw in a post-game interview was Martin St. Louis, whose, you know, number is going to be retired with the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I thought of this when I saw the news this morning that he's going to get 26 retired. Immediately my brain flashed back, for whatever reason, I don't know, to this interview that he gave during the playoffs. I can't remember. They might have been playing either Philadelphia or maybe Ottawa. And it was a play along the boards. He got a stick in the face. You know, his face was all busted up. He doesn't wear a visor, as we all know. Face was busted all up. And afterwards, the first question he was asked in the scrum was, do you think that should have been a penalty? Should it be a suspension? Reckless use of the stick. And he stopped the interview. Like, he stopped the reporter even before the reporter got the question. He said, whoa, 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 whoa. No, this is hockey. Things happen out there. I need to protect myself better. I know as a smaller guy, when I go into a scrum like that, when I get around six, I'm going to get hit in the face. I need to make sure that I protect myself better in a situation like that. And I think of Victor Hedman in his rookie year. Remember that Ottawa game? Rookie year. It might have been like the fourth or fifth game of the season for Tampa with Hedman as a rookie. Hedman's coming behind the Tampa net. Chris Neal screaming down the wing, right? Flattens him, right? So Colby Armstrong, Rafi Torres hit. Boom, right? Just roasts him. And afterwards, what does he say? I got to be more careful back there. He doesn't say, oh, that's a bad hit. Got to get that out of the game. There's no room for this. No, I got to be more careful back there. I need to watch myself when I'm curling around. I'm not playing in the Swedish league anymore. I need to be more careful. And I think that's the message of the Jimmy Vesey Radko Gudas situation. It's unfortunate that hit happened. It's good that Jimmy Vesey didn't come out with it with anything more than a bloody nose. But you really have to look around and see what's out there and know who's out there. And when you're making a race for that puck, look over your shoulder to see who's there.
Right.
Yeah. I think
they got it right. I was expecting a suspension because I thought they'd do some message sending.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a suspension. And obviously him coming back and scoring a goal in the third period, if you know anything about the Department of Player Safety, that's not going to enhance the case against Radko Gudas in that situation at all. All right, Sammy, let's cue up the thing that we do to start the show.
It's called an intro.
Because we have Rob Bowman coming up to talk about his book. We have a lot of other things to get to. And with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Give him enough time. Let's see what we got. Ooh. An old-timey piece here, Greg.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Every time I try to talk, you're jumping over me. Why don't you just land the plane here today? I'm going to turn my mic off. You go.
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
There you go. Go on.
Well, now it's dead air. I'm waiting. Top right, pop right back in.
You tell me when you're done.
I'm done. Go ahead.
The big hockey. Pop culture. And more hockey. Versus Wyshynski.
Sam loves to slip in that one when we were fighting one a lot.
That's my favorite one.
Just a hockey argument.
That's my favorite one for sure. It was like the first time I saw my parents fighting, you know?
Last time.
What was the first big blow up? Was it the Rick Nash contract?
Oh, you mean for Sam's parents? It was, oh my God, you're going to allow him to become a radio producer?
Oh, that's good.
No, it was the Rick Nash one. It was a drunk episode.
That's right. I forgot about that.
But that fight was great because it was such a specific, like, it was a bar fight, basically. It was like one thing that both stuck in our craws that probably no one else even gave a shit about. But we were going to fight because we were in the same room. We were going to fight until one of us fell off the mountain.
Best part about that was I don't remember what it was. What
yeah, neither
was.
Do I. Yes.
I just know Rick Nash was involved. I didn't tell you what it was about.
Hey, before we get too into the show, tell the people what's going on with you, podcast-wise and work-wise. You had some things going on that you needed to announce this week.
Oh, yeah, doing all the prospect work now for Sportsnet. So doing all the top 31, we now have Las Vegas, monthly lists. We're doing prospect articles and a regular podcast called The Prospect Project 2017, All Eyes on Chicago in June for the 2017 NHL Draft. So we launched everything this week, the top 31 rankings, some other prospects to keep your eyes on, a list of goaltenders as well. What I tried to do is not just, okay, here's a list, here's a bunch of guys, here's how much they weigh, but I really sort of went out of my way the last month and a half to talk to as many people as I could and get a little bit of a get some stories on all these guys. So let you know what the background is, as opposed to just a bunch of random names, half of which you can't even pronounce, just to say, hey, look, we have a list together. I really wanted to make sure that there was at least a little bit of color to this one. So at least, you know, like a few sentences or maybe even a paragraph on some of these guys that you should probably get to know, because the draft always comes up quick. And I think it is funny. I talked to a friend of mine yesterday. He said, yeah, it's a great list. You know when people will care? When teams start sucking. That's when everyone's going to start care about your dumb list. And he's probably right. that you start to pay attention to the prospects that are out there when your team starts to fall out of it. So that's what I got going on right now. So I'll be doing
that's all
cool. the prospecting stuff. For sport. Yeah, you know what, man? You know how I love the draft, and I always
know
it's been a big deal for me. And so I'm happy. You know, Damian did it for the last couple of seasons. He was on that beat for Sportsnet, and I'm on it now. It's funny, too, because Warner and I used to laugh at him every Friday doing junior hockey because he'd have his black book with all of his prospects, and he'd wrestle over whether this guy should be 15 or, oh, what do I do with this, and how do you measure off the Swedish Hockey League talent versus the USHL versus the QMJHL, and how do, but this guy playing at BU, and we would just laugh at him pour over that. Until I had to whittle down a list of about 125 prospects down to 31 and did the exact same thing that Damien's done for 2 years. So, yeah, that's what I'm up to now.
We actually have a junior question for you from Jake Rudolph, the listener. Do you think Windsor is pissed that the Ducks have signed Natanen to San Diego and not the Spitfires?
He will still probably end up a Windsor Spitfire. He can go and do San Diego camp and then go to Windsor after that. Not unlike what Winnipeg did with Jack Raslovic and the London Knights. I would expect still to see him in London and probably ditto for Julius Natanen, who they traded in the offseason from the Barrie Colts. 1-2 down the middle, Windsor's going to run with Logan Brown as their first-line center, Natanen with their second-line center. Gabe Vilardi, who will be a top five pick in this year's draft, should be a center there, but he's going to be forced over to the wing, although he's a natural center and will be one of those in the NHL. But pissed? No. I think they're more pissed that Clayton Keller hasn't signed an entry-level deal with the Arizona Coyotes. So he would leave Boston and go to the Windsor Spitfires. It's a long-winded way of saying, no, probably not.
Okay. That's good to know. We've cleared that up. One other question that I think this is interesting about the Bolts. Should the Bolts retire Le Cavalier first?
I thought they would have.
The San Luis thing's really interesting for that very reason, which is that you had a situation this summer where all of the big three, Richards and Le Cavalier and San Luis, are all now retired. And I'm guessing this is Jeff Vinnick trying to mend fences and trying to build bridges and trying to get everybody past what happened with San Luis, requesting the trades and finally basically demanding one, and getting to the Rangers in 2014. I'm guessing this is Vinnick trying to mend that bridge and put out the fire and by putting him first. That's all I can think. Vinny is, with all due respect to Marty San Luis, Vinny's the biggest star the franchise has ever had. True or false?
100%, totally, absolutely, yeah. Vincent LeCavalier, totally. Here's where it might make sense. If dovetailing this announcement, we see Martin St. Louis with a position with the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's the only
that
thing that I could think.
Okay,
we're doing Marty first because, you know, he's going to be working for the organization. We better smooth this out here.
Now,
before he becomes a member of the org again.
Here's the trick with
that.
But
I don't know that.
Here's the trick with that.
I don't know if that's going to happen.
I read an entire press release this morning and listened to a 20-minute conference call earlier this morning, both involving Marty San Luis, and I did not hear Steve Yzerman's name once. Every time somebody gets their number retired, it's always, I'd like to thank, you know, Mr. Vinnick for his hospitality, but I'd like to thank Mr. Yzerman for providing the... Nothing. Not a single mention of Steve Yzerman.
Really,
Very, very...
To the point where it's obvious?
Obvious.
Did anyone on the call, when it was question period, say, Marty, can you say the name Steve Yzerman, please, for us?
No,
to hear what it sounds like coming out of your mouth?
They ended it before I got a chance to be honest with you. but on the conference call, I mean, it started off with these very general questions about, you know, what does it feel like?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's what an honor. And, oh, you know, I never thought Tampa was going to be my last shot, and they were terrible when I got here. But if they were not, all that usual stuff that you could imagine.
Yeah.
And then someone's like, you know, somebody from Tampa is like, Marty, what do you think about the bitterness the fans have towards that situation? Do you think this might help? And he, you know, goes into this long soliloquy about wanting to move past it and hoping people were over it, and you got to do things for your family sometimes, blah, 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 blah. But you could tell that the demeanor of that call changed pretty damn quickly. Like, he is not somebody – he's somebody who obviously knows that this is going to be an issue throughout the entire thing until that number's hanging up there, but not somebody who wants to deal with it and really hopes that people get over themselves. At one point, he actually said, I'm sorry that I hurt the fans' feelings, which is very sort of – but he also said that it hurt him and left to leave too. Which I obviously it did.
You know what we're learning along the way here? And listen, for the position, it's a commendable trait. And even this goes back to his playing days as well. Steve Yzerman is not lovable Stevie, is he?
No, he never
was. He wasn't when he was a player.
Yeah.
And he's not as an executive.
Mm-hmm.
He is all effing business. Cold. Mm-hmm. Right? Make the argument rightfully so. You have to in that position. I get it. But he is, like, he's showing those, and he did this as a player as well. Really cold-hearted, you know, meticulous, unforgiving, long memory. You know, he's not the lovable aw shucks guy next door that a lot of people wanted him to be because of those, you know, that great smile and those good looks.
Yeah.
He's a cold-blooded killer behind those eyes.
I think that there is a story to be written, and maybe it won't be written until everybody's retired, but a story to be written about the dynamic between Yzerman and Fedorov and the dynamic between Taves and Kane.
Hmm.
Now, there's a certain cultural difference, obviously, there that you're dealing with, but the idea of stoic, sometimes even nasty captain and his party boy... sometimes getting into trouble, apprentice, and infinitely talented. By the way, infinitely more talented apprentice too, I would say. I think there's a story to be written there.
Yeah, could very well be. I think that's well, it's funny too though. But Steve, at the same time, loved Bob Probert, didn't he? Like, that line with Steve Yzerman, Gerard Gallant, and Bob Probert was pretty freaking good.
Yeah, it
and
was.
As far as sort of being
but, I mean,
out
that
there
was
a... and the classic distraction. I mean, that was
but,
that was
but
Bob Probert to a T.
Sergei Fedorov never, you know, saved Yzerman from getting his ass handed to him. Probert's out there serving a different purpose.
Good point. You're a witness.
like I'm sure Tave probably
wonder,
liked Brian Bickle a lot, too.
I wonder how much of... you know, Steve Yzerman's personality was set in those first few years with Detroit, where it seemed like every single year, and Taylor Hall must have felt this way in Edmonton, every single year he had a different coach. Mm-hmm. What did Yzerman have, like four coaches in 5 years when he started?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it was until Brian Murray came that he had a coach for more than like a year and a half or 2 years.
You know, it's funny. We talk about the Edmonton thing all the time as far as like those guys having a lot of coaches. I was doing a story on Erik Karlsson earlier this week.
Oh, boy.
I got some coaches, too.
Oh, yeah. Ottawa's gone through them.
All right. Our guest is here, sir.
All right. He's Rob Volman. Hockey Abstract presents Stat Shot. I got an advanced reading copy of this last year, Wish, and I've read it a couple of times. And the wonderful thing about this book, when you're me, is I'm not smart, so I keep having to read it over and over again. So the spine is well-worn and well-cracked. The author is Rob Volman. He joins us now, the author of Stat Shots, the ultimate guide to hockey analytics. Rob, how are you today, bud?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well. Pleasure to talk to you again. First met you a couple of years ago, face-to-face on our trade deadline coverage at Sportsnet, and nice to talk to you here on the podcast. I guess maybe one of the most obvious question is, why did it take so long for a book like this to come out?
Well, that's a really good question. You can't blame me. I've done fine. But, you know, I think it's taken a little bit longer for stats to gain interest in the world of hockey the way it has in other sports. And I think all that changed, if you ask me, all that changed. And if you remember, in 2014, the Leafs, which, of course, are the center of the hockey universe,
yeah,
they made the playoffs in 2013 against all the statisticians said that they were terrible, and they made the playoffs. So everyone was having a good time talking about how stats really have no place in hockey, and the Toronto Maple Leafs are proof. And then, of course, the next year they had that collapse. And the Maple Leafs themselves, with all that attention on the statisticians and on the stats, a lot of people started paying closer attention to this sort of stuff. And the Leafs themselves decided to pull a 180 and build an analytics department of their own. And I think that was the turning point.
And now we have a 13-year-old general manager in Glendale. with a stats background. Rob, I was reading an interview with you about the book, and you got into the idea of, you know, these teams that are hiring analytics people, right? And I was wondering where your head's at on that. Do you think it's still for show, as has been pointed out by some of the critics, or do you think that the majority of the league is making a concerted effort to bring analytics into their thought process?
I guess the closest comparison I like to give is, you know, remember when we were young and each NHL team had just one coach? You just had sort of Al Arbor standing there by himself. Now, of course, you've got the head coach, you've got the associate coach, you've got a goalie coach. Some teams have an assistant goalie coach. You've got the eye in the sky. You've got the special teams coach, the conditioning coach, the video coach, the coaching coach, all these coaches. And it would be reckless for you to actually start a season with just Al Arbor, with just one coach. That would be seen as reckless now. Even three or four would be seen as reckless. Right now, we're still in the stage where people have just one statistician. And it might be a fresh grad student. It might just be a blogger who buys a copy of StatShot and applies it. It might not necessarily be like that character Jonah Hill played in that Moneyball movie. It might actually just be someone a bit more junior. And that's okay for now. But you know the day is going to come where that's going to be seen as reckless, and every team is going to have a full analytics staff with degrees from MIT and so on.
I have a problem with the term analytics. Because to me, it somehow has this connotation that it's separate from all the other real stats. Oh, the only stats I mentioned are goals and assists and points and wins. That's it. And analytics are its own sort of separate entity. I look at it, and it took me a while to get there, but I look at it as all the same. It's all under the exact same umbrella. Rob, agree or disagree?
You know, Tyler Dello had an interesting quote. They said, "Why do you call it analytics?" And he said, "No one paid me to do it until I did." So, you know, likewise, I mean, on the cover of StatShot, if I just said StatShot, you know, the ultimate guide to a few interesting numbers, wouldn't sell as well, you know. So hockey analytics, I think, is just a term we use. It's more of a marketing term. It doesn't isn't really meant to reflect what it actually is. Neither is, you know, people saying advanced stats or fancy stats or even non-traditional stats. They're just stats. They're just, it's an objective analysis of the game. And this is just a marketing term that we use.
Yeah, that's why I prefer the NHL's dumbed down version, enhanced stats, which sounds like stats on dick pills. But it's fine. Just let the NHL do what they do when they do it. The thing in your book that I found fascinating, I think a lot of people find fascinating, is the concept of team building and franchise building. And I was wondering who in the National Hockey League right now you think is doing it right. Who do you give the love to in the NHL right now?
Well, I would say there's a few teams that I think are heading the right direction. That is to say, they have a director of analytics with, you know, a solid background education and lots of power, a direct line to the GM, and then a staff of statisticians and programmers. I mean, the statistics department is more than just statisticians. You also have programmers and data warehouse experts and so on. So I would say, you know, teams that fit that description would include the Toronto Maple Leafs, obviously are headed that way. The Florida Panthers, of course, are publicly acknowledged to have gone that way. I think teams like, you know, you've got Pittsburgh and Carolina and Washington. There's sort of a handful of teams that are known to have built some sort of staff. And you mentioned the Arizona Coyotes as well. And there's some teams that I have no insight into personally, but just judging them from their actions, it's clear that teams like Chicago have been doing it for a long time, Los Angeles, and that more recently Nashville has done a 180 and really jumped on board.
Do you think that there's ever going to come a day where there's one ultimate stat which sort of encapsulates, like every player will have an ultimate number beside them which takes into consideration all the things that underlying numbers feeds into? I think that ever happens, Rob?
Well, I mean, we already have so-called catch-all statistics. Like in baseball, it's called WAR. In hockey, there's several of them, like GDT, and there is one called WAR. However, it's just one perspective. I don't think you can ever sum up a player with a single number any more than a scout could sum up a single player with one sentence. It takes a variety of different perspectives to know exactly, you know, what a player brings to the table. although there are times and applications where it's certainly handy to have a single number, it's never going to be sort of like the, it's never going to replace anything else. It's just going to be a perspective that you add to the discussion.
Interesting stuff. So where, I know that you had your eye on the World Cup this year and the, you know, the advent of player tracking and things like that. I was sort of discouraged still from Sport Vision and from the NHL to hear that we're still kind of trying and pushing and trying to convince these guys to spend some dough on it. Where are you on player tracking? Do you think we're going to see it? And when we see it, is it going to just open up the floodgates of information?
No, I love it. I think that is the future. And many teams have already been doing it and doing it for years. There's a number of companies out there that either do manual tracking with former players and scouts and coaches, or they have video technology where you can feed it an HD feed of an NHL game, and the video camera technology will classify all the events that happen on the ice. And so there's already teams doing that. And if anything, those teams, I'm speculating a bit here, but those teams are probably trying to stop the NHL from doing that, because that's the advantage they have over the majority of NHL teams, is they have that data and the other teams do not. And at the very minimum, that gives you more accurate data than sort of the hand-counted stuff in the NHL score sheets, first of all. And second of all, it gives you all sorts of data that isn't even in the score sheets that tell you about, you can break down all the puck battles into like the various components and figure out who's best at various things, like who's the best at stretch passes, who's the best at setting up a screen, and so on and so forth, or preventing a screen. So I think that is the future, and I'd love to see it sooner rather than later, but I think some of the teams have a vested interest to actually stop that technology.
Well, the technology, and this is sort of a corollary to that, what about the technology that will tell you how fast a player can skate, whether one leg is pumping harder than the other leg? Because the one thing when I talk to players that I keep coming back, that they keep coming back to is, you know, this is all very personal information. And when it comes to arbitration, you know, a lot of this player tracking, you know, you can't hide injuries anymore, essentially. And that's where the fight is going to be with the NHL Players Association. They don't want that, you know, my hip's not firing at 100%. That all of a sudden becomes an issue that's thrown on the table when it comes time to arbitration. Isn't that where I think you think, Rob, the pushback is going to come from the Players Association? Although it may be fascinating for us as viewers of the game and people who analyze it from the players' point of view, this is one of the last things they want.
You know, I've talked to a few agents that represent players, and they see a little bit differently. They were actually very happy when the NHL rolled out the real-time scoring stats, RTSS, like takeaways and hits and block shots and so on.
Yep.
And they were also happy when NHL.com rolled out what they call the enhanced stats, like Corsi and the shot attempts and stuff like that, because that gives the agent more power to walk into a room and say, look, my player leads the league in this stat or in that stat. The more stats that are out there, I guess the more leverage, the more wiggle room agents have to make the case for their players. So, yeah, I guess it is true. You can't necessarily cover up bad performances easily, or even if it's fueled by injuries or whether it's just, you know, a player's on the decline. I think the more information you give an agent, the happier they're going to be.
Yeah, unless there's, you know, that type of tracking that shows you exactly when and where a player's body is breaking down. That to me is going to be the push.
Right. If they do all the, if they do all the sort of the things they want to do as far as like checking a player's constitution and seeing how many reps he does in practice and things like that is what they're trying to do as well. The health stuff.
Hey, let me ask you a question about goalies, Rob. I mean, this is still, you know, sort of virgin territory for a lot of people doing sophisticated analysis. Do you know, I've been trying to find one. If there is a stat that is kept, maybe SportLogic does this, I don't know, that shows you the amount of shots that go wide on a goaltender, and to me the value of that is, that to me tells me how in position a goalie is and how psychologically players need to think they need to make the perfect shot to beat that goaltender. I'm really curious to see which goaltender has the most wide shots directed at him during a game. Do we have a stat like that?
No, not to my knowledge, but it is possible to construct. We do have the data. We do know when all the missed shots are taking place, like on the ice in the NHL game files. And of course, we know who's in net for all those missed shots. So right. While I can't think of someone that's actually put it together, In fact, when they do, we can name it after you. But it's
great.
But to my knowledge, no one's put it together. But we have the data. It can be done quite quickly and easily by those who are equipped to do so.
Last one for me, Rob.
You want to suggest a very specific analytic like I just did, Smarty Pants? Go on, big boy.
I know. I didn't hear you sell pucks in deep, to our guests, as you've often sold me on pucks in deep being an
PIDs,
analytic.
Oh, PIDs, man. PIDs is PIDs, the best fancy stat. Yeah, PIDs are great.
So I would argue the biggest analytic story of the offseason was the Subban Weber trade, in which everybody looked at PK and said, my God, this guy drives possession. They're getting a great player here. And everybody looked at Weber and said, why does everybody in the league talk about him being super scary, and yet it's apparent that he's either being propped up by his partners or maybe isn't all that good anymore? Where do you stand on Shea Weber, who I think is now become in some ways sort of the litmus test for advanced stats and evaluating a deal, where, again, like, you literally have guys on and off the record in this league saying, I don't want to play against him, he's ferocious and great, and then the numbers don't necessarily bear that out?
You know, it's funny. When the first time I talked to Steve Simmons, he said that he used to like analytics until he heard them say that Shea Weber was, you know, a bad player. And to which I responded, analytics didn't say anything. They just sit there on a page.
Yeah. If I could stop you there, Rob, I'm pretty sure Steve Simmons soured on analytics when analytics analysts said he was a bad writer. Not necessarily anything about Shea Weber.
All right.
But
All right. Well, fair enough. But, you know, the key thing is stats don't say anything. They just sit there on a page. Really, his beef and the beef of those who agree with him, it's not with the stat. It's with the person making interpretation of the stat. And I guess my interpretation of Shea Weber is that, you know, in 2012, when Philadelphia offered or signed that large offer sheet, David Poile at the time really had no choice but to match that offer sheet. He had just lost Ryan Suter. His blue line was Hal Gill and a bunch of rookies. So we had to match that. And then for those years, Shea Weber was able to give those young players the shelter and protection they needed by taking all the tough minutes and getting beat up on the score sheet so that those young players could develop. Well, now they've developed. Now they're actually really good players. Roman Josi and Matthias Ekholm and Ryan Ellis, they're really good players. They don't need Shea Weber anymore and that big contract. So the timing was right for David Poile, who actually is a huge fan of analytics, to ship Shea Weber away for the type of player that can fully unleash the potential of that blue line. You know, and that's PK Subban. Everyone knows he's amazing at driving possession, whether he used the score sheet or not. So long story short, Shea Weber was the right player at the right time, but he's no longer the right player in Nashville. And you have to admire the confidence of a GM who's so certain in that he's willing to trade away a player of Shea Weber's reputation. If that trade goes badly, he's fired. That took a lot of confidence in what he believes in and how he sees the game. And you have to admire a GM who can do that.
He's almost become the anti-David Poile. Like, this is a different side of David Poile. Forever he had the reputation of, you know, he's very measured, you know, takes a long time to make decisions. And for a long time, you know, David Poile always had the reputation of, you know, the guy that couldn't make the deal because he overthought it. But if you look at David Poile in the past couple of seasons, whether it's the Seth Jones, I mean, his entire top six is all trades. All of them, right? Forsberg, Yerat, all of a sudden Fisher's a trade, Johansson's a trade, all of them go right down the list. James Neal, they're all trades. Then pulls off the biggest one of the offseason with PK Subban and Shea Weber. He's become almost the opposite of himself in a lot of ways. He's a fascinating study when it comes to general managers. There's perhaps none more interesting than David Poile in the past couple of seasons. The book is called Stat Shot, The Ultimate Guide to Hockey Analytics. Mr. Volman, the floor is yours. Why should people find value in this book, and why should they pick it up?
Well, mostly so I can eat. But first of all, the main reason you want to buy this book is, listen, you might not be a hardcore statistician, but you've watched the games, you've heard the terms, you've heard about zone entries and possession and all that, and you'd like to, you know, get in on the fun a little bit and actually figure out what these stats really mean and what the background is behind them. And first and foremost, this is just a fun hockey book. It's not a textbook. It's a fun hockey book. It's full of stories and insights and laughs, and it's really sort of my take on stats and how they fit in hockey and how they answer questions. So mostly you get it to have a lot of fun.
Cartoons, Rob. You have cartoons in a stats book. What's going on here?
Yeah, well, that's also, I'm trying to set the tone here. Not only that, though, but the foreword. The foreword wasn't written by a statistician or even by an NHL GM. It was written by a superfan, Sean McKindle, Down Goes Brown, because that's really who this book is for. It's for the superfan.
And it's a also, great read.
And really as I said the other day, I said last rights over either myself or Rob getting the number one spot on Amazon because Gretzky has a book coming out this month.
So I think, all right, good luck, boys.
We're both screwed on that one.
Good luck, fellas.
All right, Rob, man. Great stuff. Thank you so much for joining the show.
All right, you bet.
Rob Volman is the author of Stat Shots, The Ultimate Guide to Hockey Analytics. It's a good book, man. It's a fun one. I mean, I've gone through it a couple of times now, and it's one of those where I have to read a couple of pages, put it down, think about it, and then pick the book up back again. But that's just because I'm dumb, and anyone listening to this program right now, A, knows that, and B, is smarter than me and won't have the same experience. You'll probably be able to read it wire to wire.
Now, while we've been doing the show, some news came out on the Twitters.
Yakupov?
About the Chicago Blackhawks kicking ye old tires on Nail Yakupov. Now, McKenzie kind of shot this down a little bit as saying it's something that could happen down the line. And I think his logic is pretty sound, which is, you know, you're turning over a number of positions on the Blackhawks this season to kids. If you feel like you need to improve your forward group, you probably would explore something like this. But the part of it that I don't get is, I mean, just give the kid a run with McDavid this season and see what happens. Like, give him 3 months with McDavid before you cut ties, right?
Before he was injured, that line with Benoit Pouliot, Connor McDavid, and Nail Yakupov was pretty freaking awesome, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was pretty great, you know? It was almost as if, you know, if you're Nail Yakupov, you're saying to yourself, look, I'm not going to touch the puck in my zone, in the neutral zone, or until I get deep into the offensive zone. I just need to get myself in position to take a shot. Connor's going to feed it to me, and the minute the puck is on my stick, it's got to be off. And that's going to be my game, and I'm going to get 65 points.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got injured and all went poof. But you're right. But it seems as if, I mean, that Lucic, Eberle, McDavid line looks pretty good too. But don't you get the feeling now that Edmonton is looking for, you know, the final nail in the coffin for, pardon the pun, for Nail Yakupov, just to finally be rid of him?
Yeah, of course. But I mean, if you go by the reporting that was done over the weekend, I think it was by Elliot, talking about how, you know, there wasn't even a third round pick or even less being offered for Yakupov, like, they have to take salary back from Chicago, allegedly, if they're going to make this deal happen. I don't even know. I mean, I don't know if it's just trying to talk down his value or what, but there's such weird noise around this kid the entire time. The other thing, too, is, like, as much as it'd be great for him to get a run with McDavid, you're right. Like, Eberle is going to run that, going to be on his right wing to start the season and probably won't leave it.
Yeah. If I were the Boston Bruins, I would try to get Nail Yakupov.
And put him
with David Krejci. It is low risk. It is low risk. I would put Krejci with Nail Yakupov.
It's low risk except for the fact that it's Boston.
Doesn't matter.
It does matter. You need to put Chicago's a great place for Yak. Expectations are going to be super low.
Both the centerman are left-hand shots.
He's going to be in a place where he's not going to be counted on to be anything but an improved version of himself. He's going to have a strong coaching staff. He's going to have another Russian on the roster. He gets a good spot for him. And I don't think Boston's a good spot for him. I think Boston's a bad place for him.
If I'm a team out there, one specifically, if I'm the Boston Bruins, I'm seeing how I can get Nail Yakupov.
All right. EA Sports put out their NHL 17 2016-2017 season simulation. I don't know if you've seen this yet.
No.
This is the order of teams in the Eastern Conference from 1 through 8.
Writing them down.
All right, ready?
Yep.
Sure. Here you go. The Tampa Bay Lightning, 107 points. The Montreal Canadiens, 99 points. The Washington Capitals, 97 points. I don't know in what world they don't get 100 points.
Okay,
that's fine. The Pittsburgh Penguins will have 93 points. The Florida Panthers will also have 93 points. The Philadelphia Flyers will also have 93 points. And your two wild card teams, the New York Islanders with 92 points, and the Toronto Maple Leafs with 91 points.
Oh, my God. Come on, are you serious?
Who put this together?
This is the EA Sports NHL
17
season simulation. The Toronto Maple Leafs will finish 1 point behind the Islanders, 2 points ahead of the Rangers, 3 points ahead of the Red Wings, and a full 7 points ahead of the Boston Bruins. And they'll be a wild card team, according to EA Sports.
No. No, 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 and no. To me, Toronto is either 30th or 29th in the NHL. I don't see them better than anyone else in the Eastern Conference.
You don't trust the Freddie Anderson effect?
They're a better... He can't stay healthy. They're a better team than they were last year. They're still not a team that can jump over anyone else in the East, in my estimation. I don't see it. I don't know how it can happen. I really don't. They're improved, but not by that much, EA Sports.
Do you think they could...
No.
This logically
no.
Here.
No.
Hold on. No, I'm not saying...
Nolan Patrick, Timothy Liljegren, that's what you're looking at.
Better than the Blue Jackets?
No.
Yeah, sure.
No. No.
Could they finish higher than the Devils?
No.
Carolina comes back to the pack? No.
No. Carolina's galloping forward, bud.
Team I can't figure out is Ottawa. Like, what is that team going to look like?
How are they going to be coached?
That's what I'm talking about. They are.
I don't know.
They're the X factor of X factors in the Eastern Conference. Because if you can get them sorted out defensively and not cost Erik Karlsson his points,
or Mike Hoffman his goals,
right? They could be an interesting little pick.
Yeah. No.
To make some noise.
No,
Western Conference, according to EA Sports, Western Conference, Nashville Predators, right. 110 points.
That's my cup pick.
Dallas Star, that's their cup pick too. Dallas Stars,
really?
107 points.
Yeah, something there.
The San Jose. The San Jose Sharks, 107 points. I think it's a little high.
I think it is too.
Chicago Blackhawks, 102. Might be a little low. Wild card number one. St. Louis Blues.
That's only four teams.
Hold on.
Yeah, Nashville, Dallas, San Jose, Chicago.
They've ranked them as far as the conference goes. So your first wild card is St. Louis, the fourth team from the Central.
Okay.
The second place team in the Pacific will be the Los Angeles Kings at 93 points. Your other wild card is the Minnesota Wild with 87. And I would agree. I think Boudreaux is getting them into the playoffs. Which means that there's one spot left, sir. The third place team in the Pacific Division. And according to EA Sports, that team will be?
Calgary Flames.
Edmonton Oilers. The thing about them is that I still don't think they've got enough D. I do like Talbot, and Connor's going to probably win the Art Ross.
They don't have enough D. Their bottom six still needs work. Their top six has always been good. The bottom six is where they've had the problems. The D's still not good enough, and I'm still not 100% sold on Cam Talbot.
See, I'm more sold on Talbot than I am on anything that they've done to the defense in front of him. They're a tough team.
I think they're a bubble team.
Well, they're one point better than Calgary, according to this breakdown.
Who would you have on top, Edmonton or Calgary? I would take Calgary. Based on the blue line,
and the better goaltender,
and Brian Elliott.
Gullitson, second time around, learns a thing or two about a thing or two.
Bob Hartley long pass game anymore?
Yeah, I'm making a wish with my heart when I say Edmonton, but I would have to logically say Calgary gets the third spot in the Pacific.
I would love to see Edmonton in the playoffs. More Connor McDavid, yeah, bring it on.
Anaheim Ducks, 77 points. By the way,
they may be the biggest disaster in the NHL this year. Like, as far as expectation versus performance, that thing might just cave in there.
Yeah, well, and deservedly so, because they're dumbasses for blaming it on Boudreaux. The guy can't win a game 7. Did it cost him his job? Bring in Randy Carlyle? Like, you fire Boudreau if you believe that you have someone that can win you a game seven. You hired a coach that may not even get you into the playoffs.
Who may just infuriate everybody in that room.
Now, you're saying to yourself, okay, self, what do the playoffs look like? Well, I'll give you the final four from each conference.
All right, EA Sports.
According to EA Sports, the Capitals and Penguins will play in the semifinals, and the Capitals will win. Capitals will win 4-3.
Finally slay the dragon.
According to EA Sports, the Canadiens and Lightning will play in a semifinal.
Hang on, hang on, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Like, I'm asking you honestly, it's going to sound like a joke, but I'm being honest.
Yeah.
Who's breaking the puck out in Montreal? Who's breaking the puck out of their own zone? On the blue line?
Not entirely sure.
Okay. Just curious.
Okay. Montreal will, of course, beat Tampa 4-2 in that series.
But
then Montreal... What? I'm sorry?
Then Montreal in the conference final. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, right, where they're going to beat the Capitals 4-2 and advance to the Stanley Cup final.
This is what EA Sports has.
Yeah. Now, keep in mind, they also had Montreal in the Stanley Cup final in their in last year's simulation before the Subban-Weber trade, but that trade didn't affect them at all because they're back in the Cup final this year, according to EA Sports.
How we say in French, tu rêves en couleur, you dream in technicolor.
Over the Western Conference, the Predators will beat Dallas 4-2 in one semifinal. The Sharks will beat Edmonton 4-1, Edmonton having previously defeated the LA Kings 4-2 in the first round.
San Jose getting back for that beating in 2006. They took it the hands.
Could you imagine Edmonton?
And Pekka and Horkoff.
Could you imagine Edmonton beating the LA Kings in six games? No playoff in a playoff series. Drew Doughty playing 30 minutes against Connor. Holy Jesus.
All right.
All right. Okay. And then the Predators beat the Sharks 4-2, and then they beat the Canadiens 4-2 for the Cup.
I've got, in our Sportsnet predictions, which, you know, I'm always loath to do, but whatever. I've got Nashville beating Tampa.
I've got Nashville and the Capitals, but I've yet to make my pick.
Controversy.
Who wins that series? Well, I mean, come on. Like, EA Sports clearly wants it to be the Weber-Subban final, and that's what their computer apparently spit out. But the Barry Trotz final.
You don't want the Larson Hall final? Edmonton, New Jersey? Come on, man. Hall's revenge against Edmonton?
I want the same thing out of the Devils that I wanted last year. A very high draft choice. But that no good Corey Schneider will probably foil us again.
He is really good.
It may come down to me pulling a Tanya Harding on him at some point during the season to ensure that you get a higher draft pick.
You know, there is that center in Brandon that we would like to take first overall. Thank you.
We don't need any more centers. We have Adam Henrique and Zacha, and obviously Zajac as well. So
a lot of centers in the beginning of this year's draft.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a show. Thanks to Rob Bullman for joining us, informing us on all things stats. His book is quite good.
Stat Shot.
You should pick a Stat Shot. You should pick it up.
Yep, it's a good one. It's a good read.
What do you have coming up in the world of Sportsnet, sir?
What do I have? I'm on Hockey Central at noon tomorrow, and then I get to be kids hockey coach on the weekend, and then back at it on Monday as we get ready for the season, baby. All kicks off next week. Just finally get at. Oh, and I'm doing. What am I talking about? Saturday, I'm doing the pre and post for the Maple Leafs Red Wings preseason game on Fan 590. So back doing some radio.
That's
they kind of got me all over the place this year. Yeah. I'm like a venture capitalist. I just invest in as many things as possible, hoping that one or two pay off.
Oh.
Yeah, thanks.
So it's also to us Shark Tank and to you Dragon's Den.
Yeah. Right. It's my way of sort of spreading myself out really thinly as a way to not get fired. Because if they fire me, it affects too many departments. Strategic. TV, radio, web.
Yeah,
multi-platform, baby. That's the way to go.
That you make yourself indispensable.
And do all the things that no one else wants to do. Be that guy. And then tackle things like the Prospect Project. Man, it's a beast. It's like the minute you hit publish on the list, you start preparing the next list. Because like a whole bunch of info has come in on the guys. Like, okay, now we're going to rejig everything for next month. Because now we actually have games to deal with as opposed to just speculation. So now it gets hard. The fun part was whittling down from 125 to 31. God, that was arduous. So that'll be my life this year, Greg. It's when I'm super stressed out. Say, oh yeah, it's his list. He's freaking out about it.
Merrick's list. Can't wait for the photoshops of that.
I know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Patrick, over to you.
Yeah, right. Exactly. All right, folks. Back next week.
Go Jays, go.
Go Jays, go. I imagine we'll pump out one more of these things and do a real proper season preview type thing at some point.
Hell yeah, let's do it.
And we'll talk to you then. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye. Thank you.